Going Linux, episode 193, Computer America, number 57. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And it is a Tuesday edition of the Computer America show, and that means it's going to be all Linux tonight. Yes, it's the second Tuesday of the, third Tuesday of the month, and so we're going to dedicate the topic to the subject of Linux. It's going to be all about Linux, and we'll get to that in a moment. Just a couple of quick things here. I just wanted to welcome a brand new affiliate to the Computer America show, radio station KXIQ, AM 1180 in Terrell, Arizona. Welcome. Welcome, all of you, to the Computer America show. Where have you been? All right, so they have a...
I think they've been exactly where they've always been because it's a geographical location. But, you know, semantics aside, welcome to the family.
Yes, KXIQ AM 1180, welcome to the Computer America show. Glad to have all of you with us here. Well, let's get started. Obviously, the Linux operating system continues to be more and more popular. It's an important operating system. Really, I mean, it's an alternative to Windows, it's an alternative to Mac OS X, and we have decided every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And we do that every third Tuesday of the month, okay? And of course, if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us in our efforts to bring Linux to everybody is Larry Bushy. Larry is a creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and he's one of our Computer America correspondents. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I am well. I'm looking forward to our episode tonight, talking about why I use Linux and maybe why some of our audience might use Linux as well. I was worried for a few minutes that I was here on the wrong night between the second Tuesday, the third Tuesday, and all that sort of stuff, but I'm glad you reassured us that it's the third Tuesday.
It's the third Tuesday of every month, and thank you for that. Exactly. I needed that little reassurance.
Craig, I think we can safely say Craig does not make calendars in his off time.
Well, what was the first clue?
I have no idea. Now, as I said, we're going to every month I always ask Larry to pick a topic, and tonight's topic is we get a drum roll too. The topic is, why do I use Linux? Why oh why do I use Linux?
Okay. Now that's not how I meant it.
Oh, okay.
It's not why do I use Linux? My goodness.
It's like why didn't I pick the blue pill? You know exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Why do I use Linux? And he says that in a very positive manner. He wants to know why he uses Linux. Okay, and that's going to be the topic on tonight's show, for the hour, and then second hour we'll do emails. But again, as I said, if you want to get your questions answered, or you have questions about Linux, you don't know what it is, or you could be an efficient Linux user, and you might have some questions about the different distributions, something, whatever you want. Larry is here to answer your question because he knows everything about Linux and then some. So he is our correspondent, and he's here to answer your questions. And if by some rare chance that you ask a question that Larry might not know about Linux, don't worry about it because we'll get your information and we'll get the answer to you one way or the other, okay?
And I have an answer for every Linux question. Sometimes the answer is I don't know, but there's always an answer.
That's what we like to hear. Okay, so let's start off with the topic, which of course is why do I use Linux? And this is not why do I choose Linux? That's going to be next.
That's right.
That's going to be next.
Next month. Yeah.
Yes. Why do I use Linux? So why don't you get the ball rolling? Okay.
Okay. Well, so as the topic suggests, we're going to talk at first, at least, about why I, Larry Bushy, choose to use Linux, or why I use Linux, and it can all be summed up as to get things done. And just like using any other piece of software, any other hardware, any other tool, you're using it to do things. And so regardless of what those things are.
Yeah, work, play, whatever it might be.
Yeah, that's why I use Linux, is to do things. And maybe some of the things that I do are things like to communicate. And what I mean by that is I use Linux to get online, check my email, go to social media communities. By the way, we just started a Going Linux Google Plus community.
Ah.
Also, I use Linux to appear on Computer America.
All right. Well, all noble ambitions. And the music means we have to take a break, so we're just getting started. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Just getting started. Hour here on the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy is here with us. We are doing all Linux tonight. It's our Linux show. Any questions you have about Linux or related to the subject of Linux, we are here to answer your questions. Now, we just got started, and the topic is why do I use Linux? And Larry was just getting started. You said that one of the reasons that you use it is first to get things done, which is really important because that's what, you know, we use our computers to get work accomplished, and also more specifically to communicate with email or social media communities, and also most importantly to appear on Computer America. So,
of course,
Why don't you continue on?
Sure. Another reason I use Linux is to make phone calls.
Really?
Is I can use Google Talk,
yeah,
or I can use any number of VoIP, voice over internet protocol is what VoIP stands for, VoIP phones from my Linux computer. And I can also just use my mobile Android phone because that's Linux as well. So that's another way that I use Linux.
Okay.
I also, since I'm a podcaster, I use Linux to record audio. And there are plenty of different software applications in Linux that allow you to record and edit and publish podcasts like I do. And some of the recording software that's available is cross-platform. The one that I use for all of my recording is something called Audacity.
And yes.
Audacity,
been around for a long time.
Free open source program that is available for just about any computer platform that's out there.
Yeah, and I'm very familiar with Audacity. It's been around for a long time. And again, so many of these products that you're talking about, these applications that do this, are as with Linux, are completely free. And that's the other mind bending. So maybe that's another reason why you use Linux, because you're cheap.
No. Well, I am cheap, and that's the reason why I choose Linux. However,
yeah, exactly.
I think everyone likes a good deal, and much better than free.
Sure,
well,
exactly.
That's true. And many would say you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm, no.
But, you know, you get Windows for free when you buy a computer at the store as well.
Sure.
And you get OS X for free when you buy a Mac.
Yeah,
so it's all relative.
It's,
you know.
It's bundled with a computer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Linux is the only operating system that you can get for free that allows you to put it on a computer that it wasn't originally installed on.
Ah, okay. And it's the only one that but again, as you say, it's open source, and I still have so much difficulty wrapping my mind around the fact that all these products are free. for the most part. You know.
Yeah, and not just the operating system, but also the applications themselves. Yeah. Much like Android, Audacity is for recording audio, and there's audio editor programs that are there, and other applications that are available for you to do things like I do, like maintaining a website, a home server, things like that.
All right. So now maintaining a website, in other words, you can use
don't say front page.
Now,
You can use that, but just not on Linux.
Can you use something like Wix, for example? I mean, or some of these websites?
Well, that wouldn't be on your computer either way.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. You're basically
You can use it. It's a cloud-based application,
it's cloud-based,
right?
So, yeah, right.
Sure,
but
absolutely. But you're using
a browser.
There are plenty of web publishing applications out there. There's one called Bluefish that you need to know a little bit of HTML to use it.
Uh-huh.
But there are also graphical web editors out there that you can use. There's one that comes with the SeaMonkey suite. SeaMonkey is a suite of products that has a browser and a bunch of other stuff, including a web editor in it. And the one that I like to use is called Composer with a K and a Z. So spelled a little weird, but it's nice because you can type stuff out as though you were typing in a word processor, and you can, you know, build tables and put graphics and all kinds of things in there just as though you were using a word processor, and then when you're done, you can hit publish and put it on your website. That's a really cool application.
Now, is it just me, or is it the people I noticed that who develop for Linux can't spell?
You know, it's creative spelling, I think, is what it is.
Exactly.
You know, I always say, if you can't spell a word more than one way, you're just not trying.
That's very true.
Well, you can't pin this all on the Linux users. I don't think anyone on the internet in its entirety can really spell.
Well, just look at the chat room, right?
You can see it. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you'd use it to maintain a home server, and it's not very interesting that a lot of internet servers and what have you were originally created and designed using Linux.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but if you have something like a file server device, one of those NAS storage devices, they typically run Linux as well under the hood, even though, you know, you might navigate to them using Windows or Mac or any sort of operating system. The software that actually runs the storage device and makes it network accessible is Linux in many cases. So I actually have a home server set up on an old, Pentium 3 computer, I think it is. You don't need a lot of processing power. It has, you know, it came with 128 megabytes of RAM, and I upgraded it to its maximum 256 megabytes. So that gives you an idea of how old it is, but it runs just fine. It allows me to store files on a USB drive that I have connected to it and share them amongst all the computers and phones and tablets and all those devices in the home here. And if I had a DLNA aware television, which I don't, I might end up with one day, it would also serve all the media to that DLNA TV, so that all I would have to do is point the television at the media and say, stream that movie.
Wow.
And it would show up on the screen.
Very, very nice. Okay. We're continuing to find out why Larry uses Linux, and he's coming with lots of salient points. And also, we might switch gears slightly to why might you use Linux, some other possibilities. It's all about Linux for both hours here on the Computer America Show. Let's continue on now. So the topic, of course, is, why do I use Linux? And now I think we covered everything in there. I think maybe to manage my day, Google Calendar, Outlook, you mentioned that as well.
Yeah, I do use Google Calendar. I use a lot of Google stuff. But for work, we have recently switched to Outlook. And Outlook has a nice application for the web that allows you to log in to your corporate server, if you will, even from outside of the firewall, and that works out really nicely, and it works in the browser in Linux just as well as it does any other browser in any other operating system. So I use that for work as well.
Very, very nice. So let's move to the next phase of this. Is this, we've been talking about why do I use Linux now? Why might you use Linux?
Right. Now, rather than just read from the talking points that we have in the show notes, let's relate this kind of as a little story, shall we?
All right.
So let's say you're the average computer user. Mm-hmm. You come home from work and you just want to relax and watch a movie. Well, before you do, you want to check your email and catch up on the news for the day. Well, you pop open the notebook or tablet sitting on the coffee table and put your feet up, click the icon to open your mail. Maybe it's Thunderbird Mail or maybe it's browser, and then you're opening Gmail or your ISP's webmail account. Uh-huh. Either way, you're checking your email. You glance at the inbox. You click to identify the junk mail as spam and then read the post from your Aunt Zelda. She wants that link to the cat video again, so she's lost it somehow. So you send it to her again. Click, click, and you're in your feed reader where you've subscribed to exactly the kind of news you want and nothing more. You read through the headlines and find one that interests you. Samsung has a new phone, or is it a tablet? Yeah, it's another phablet, I guess. Well, anyway, click the link, view the online video review, and close it all up. You'll catch up with the rest of the news later. Now you grab last month's model of the Android phone you do have and use the remote to turn on your LCD TV. 4,000 cable channels and you've got nothing to watch. So click, you switch the TV to the Wi-Fi internet connection and you settle in to watch that one episode of Firefly that you missed before the series was canceled.
Aww.
They finally have it on TV.com website in high definition.
Did they include the episodes that didn't air on the Sci-Fi Channel too? I think there were two or three that didn't
air. Yeah, yeah. Well, some of them they do, some of them they don't, I found, and yet you can find them other ways.
All right. Got it.
Some of which aren't exactly what you would call high definition.
Got it.
But that little story kind of illustrates the fact that, you know, the average computer user may be using Linux every day and not know it. Every device that I just described could be running Linux and is running Linux in some cases. So that notebook computer, the tablet, the phone that you use to turn on the remote, use as a remote control to turn on your LCD, TV, the TV itself could be running Linux. And so, you know, you might be using Linux and not know it. Yes.
So is the only thing that qualifies it as Linux is just using that Linux kernel, or what is it?
Yeah, so Linux really is the kernel. So what we commonly refer to as Linux is not just that kernel, the basic part of the operating system that lets you boot the computer and runs what runs on top of it. The graphical user interface, the tools that you use, like a text editor, or you know, if you're a geek, you might use a software compiler. All of those tools are actually from GNU, GNU, the GNU project, which is a free and open software organization. I also almost said a company, but they're not for profit. They're an organization that is a software free software foundation is behind all of that. And so what we've referred to as Linux, they want us to talk about as GNU/Linux, not GNU Linux, but GNU/Linux, because Linux is just the kernel of the operating system that all the GNU tools actually help you to use as a real operating system. But bottom line, we often always shorten it to Linux. But to answer your question directly, yes, Linux is just the kernel. And so Android doesn't use those GNU tools, but it does use the Linux kernel and has basically the rest of the operating system built up around it using Android. And that, of course, was developed by Google. And your television, if it runs Linux, it's running a kernel of Linux, and everything else built up around it is software that makes it work like a television. Your remote control itself. Well, I guess some remote controls probably run Linux as well. But that network attached storage device that I was talking about earlier, that runs Linux, that has a kernel in it that is Linux. And then the software around it makes it so that it is a network attached storage device and nothing more.
Okay. All right. So,
just thought that needed to be, you know, kind of specified, because even though you say, you know, all this runs Linux, you know, my remote control does not have a full operating system on it. It's just a little kernel in it that, you know, makes it Linux.
Well, yeah. So they talk about that. It is an operating system. It's not a computer operating system.
There we
go. It's an embedded device operating system, which is running Linux as its kernel.
Right.
So that's the more accurate way to describe it.
So many of these devices need something to make them operate, and then they have their own operating system. Now, obviously, some of the more common ones have been iOS, you know, in the iPhone and Android and Windows in the Windows phone. But as you say, many of these other devices will actually use Linux to make them function.
Yes, exactly. And for the new listeners in the new affiliate, we often describe and define a lot of these terms. So kernel is something we were just referring to, and that is the basic part of a computer operating system. Think about computer not just as the device you use to check your email on in front of you and run applications, but a computer can be something as simple as a phone or complex as a phone, if you look at it this way, and as a television set or as a network-attached storage device. So all of those things are classified as computers when you think about it.
And here I used to think that the kernel made really good chicken. All right.
Always in on a strong joke.
Exactly. We're going to take a little break here, and we'll continue on. Larry Bushy is here with us. It's our All Linux show tonight, 866-606-8255. We'll get you on and get you through. We'll continue on with more when we come back. Computer America Show. Again, the phone number to call is 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. We'll get you on and get you through. We're talking all Linux tonight. And I understand we have a caller. His name is Steve. He's listening to us in West Palm Beach, Florida. Has a Linux question for Larry. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? I actually have more than one question for Larry Bushy. No beating around about it now. No pun intended. No, but I'm just curious, though. Honestly, I was thinking about this. I just happened to listen to the show, and it popped in my mind. So don't take this the wrong way. Everybody's got to, you know, pay the bills. You got a job to do. But because I don't hope you get in trouble for this, but Linux, was it around the same time as Windows operating system, or no?
Was it created and developed around that same time?
Yeah, like the same time Windows 3 or whatever, for example. How far you want to go
sure.
back?
Sure, yeah. Linux has been around since the early 90s, and it was developed in Finland? Finland, is it? Yeah, I think it's Finland, by Linus Torvalds. The kernel was, and then, as I was mentioning earlier, the GNU tools were added on later to develop an entire operating system. But that operating system has been around since the early 90s and has been developed ever since. It started off as kind of a text-based command line thing, much like DOS was before Windows was developed. And then when Windows 95 came on the scene, Linux was catching up in the graphical area. And today, you would be, you know, if you hadn't been using Windows forever or Mac forever, and you just looked at Linux, you would be hard-pressed to tell the difference between Linux and Windows and Mac, because they're all very well-advanced graphical user interfaces these days.
Well, what I'm just curious is, no offense to anybody, but I don't know if you know this answer, and if you don't, it's fine. But as far as from the beginning of Windows and Linux up to now, would you say for the amount of problems they had until they corrected it, at whatever point you want to consider that, do you feel you've had less problems, about the same or more compared to Windows?
Well, it depends on how you describe problems. Are you talking about breakages with the operating system? Are you talking about infections with viruses? What do you mean by problems?
Well, I mean, like, it working with, like, you know, you use Internet Explorer for Windows, and everybody else uses everything else accordingly to their operating system. And there's other ones you can use, because you obviously can use Mozilla, Firefox, Chrome, all that stuff for Windows. But
sure.
But as far as, like, everything third-party hardware, software, and the operating itself crashing, or the third-party hardware, software not working with it, or causing a crash, which one has been better or worse?
Well, you know, I think over time, each has had its ups and downs. And as software developers are fond of saying, you know, if you have a single line of code, you have bugs. And so as a result, you know, any software will crash given the right circumstances. However, there is a reason why a large proportion of the servers, the computers that actually run the internet, run Linux. And that is because the software itself is much more stable, and is not immune, but resistant, much more resistant to virus infections and hacking, primarily because of the way it's designed as compared with Windows. So today, and you know, some would say forever, Linux has been a much more stable platform, software platform. Hardware is hardware. Hardware is going to fail regardless of what runs on it in terms of software. So you really can't compare that way. Linux will run on almost any hardware that's out there. It'll run on Mac. Mac hardware. It'll run on hardware developed for Windows, and of course it'll run on hardware developed for Linux. But so it's probably a little more versatile. And it's much more standards compliant than the tools that you get on Windows. Internet Explorer, for example, is one of those browsers that web developers just hate to work with. They have to, because it's probably the most used web browser out there. But Microsoft likes to try to make its own variations from the standard become the standard, and sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not, and Internet Explorer 6 was one of those things that was just a pain in the butt for web developers. So it really depends on your perspective. You know, I've described some shortcomings of Windows here. Linux has some shortcomings as well, but many would say that Linux is much more stable than Windows. Many would disagree. But you really have to try it for yourself. And one of the nice things about Linux, especially if you're trying to try it out on a desktop to use as a regular computer, everyday computer for computing needs, you can try it for free with no risk. And you can try it without even installing it if you like.
Yeah. Well, the problem I have is, I think everybody can agree to this and testify to this, is for the internet, everybody wants it quicker and stable. So would you say Linux is better at that or the same?
In a word, yes. Yes, I would say Linux is better at that.
Hey, it's yeah,
the... Everybody steered me away from, like, Internet Explorer, especially the latest 110. They said, oh, forget that. Go to Chrome, go to this and that. And I'm like, so maybe they're right. I'm tired of everything just not working. I'm really frustrated. That's my main problem. That's what I really want to install right now. That's why
go with Firefox.
That,
like, it'll work on Windows, Linux, and Mac.
There you go.
All right. Happy holidays, guys.
Hey, happy holidays to you, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Steve.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We only got about a minute left. You want to sum it up, why you're using Linux?
Well, like I said right at the beginning, I use it to get things done. Yeah. I communicate with it. I do my podcasts. I learn and I teach all with Linux. I use it every day for everything that I do.
Okay, and that sums it up. And again, and there's so many distributions and versions of Linux, too. It's just not like Windows with this one version.
No, Linux is all about choice.
You really have
choice of which kind of Linux is best for you and the applications themselves. If you don't like one word processor, there are 100 more you can choose from.
And that's what we talk about. And that's what we talk about, all the different varieties and assortments of Linux on our Linux show. Remember, every third Tuesday of the month, we dedicate to the topic of Linux. All right. Well, now, coming up in hour two, we're going to shift gears and go to some of the emails that we've received over the month regarding Linux. And Larry has picked a number of them, some very interesting subject matter. And we will begin with Richard, who listens to him in the UK. So we'll talk to him. We'll read his email as well.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and we dedicate the entire show, the third Tuesday of the month, to the subject of Linux. Here with us is Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we continue on with him. Larry, welcome back into Hour 2, of course.
Thank you.
And we're going to read some of these emails. Now, these emails are of a variety, come from a number of people all over the globe who listen to either the Computer America Show or the Going Linux podcast. And Larry selects some of them that he thinks are of most interest, and we're going to read them and answer them if they require an answer. So let's start off with the one from Richard, who listens in the UK. And he starts out with a correction from Larry's last appearance. So go ahead.
Yes. Corrections are always wonderful. Our listeners have been taking pleasure in correcting what I say incorrectly, or you know, that sort of thing. And I have to correct myself here, otherwise I know I'll hear about it. I said that Linux was the only operating system that you can install on a computer for free that wasn't originally installed on the hardware. There are others like BSD and Unix and other kinds of software.
Sure.
So it's not the only one, but it's the most popular one.
There you go.
So moving on. Back to Richard, who's correcting me about something else. He says, good afternoon, Larry. Of course, it's not afternoon anymore. Yeah. But anyway, I was just listening to the above episode. I guess he must have included the episode number in the subject line that I didn't put in there, and wanted to state that you were incorrect about saying that World of Warcraft was only a 32-bit application. There has been a 64-bit client available for approximately 1 year now. Kind regards, Richard, Ramsgate, Kent, United Kingdom.
So there.
Yes. And I have to say, that is the first of three emails from different people telling me the same thing. So that tells you that I do not play World of Warcraft.
That one, I guess, would also be for me, because I kind of agreed with you, and I kind of led you, you know, to that conclusion that World of Warcraft was only 32-bit. Apparently, after 7 years of the game being out, in February, they did release a 64-bit, which I never used, and I never really heard about because I never took time to reinstall it. But he's right. There is a 64-bit version.
Now,
I'll take that, Ben, as he's correcting you and not me.
Well, let me ask you.
Right. It's just, you know, I'm surprised that they finally came out that, you know, after 7 years, and I guess the 64-bit is a recent development, quote unquote.
Well, let me ask you this. Would the 64-bit somehow play better or have better graphics? Or what would be the advantage of a 64-bit?
You know, just general 64, 32-bit, you know, able to utilize more RAM and more, you know, more memory and things like that. Honestly, probably not. You know, if your graphics card is good enough, if your processor is good enough, 32-bit to 64-bit really isn't going to make that much difference.
Right. If it all boils down to how much RAM can your operating system address. And it's more of a problem with Windows than it is with anything else. So 32-bit versions of Windows has a limit of just under 4, I think it is, gigabytes of RAM that it can address.
Right.
64 has much, much more.
Yeah.
And with Linux, you can get a 32-bit kernel that can address just, not quite as much, but almost as much RAM as a 64-bit kernel. So with Linux, it really doesn't matter. It's really a problem with Windows.
Okay, but he just wanted to let us know that there's a 64-bit version of World of Warcraft.
And boy, am I glad he did.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, hey, you know, Ben really knows this stuff well, so I was surprised that Ben wasn't even aware of it.
Again, you know, I had World of Warcraft on my computer for 7+ years. I never took the time to reinstall it, so I really, you know, I just used the 32-bit, and it worked perfectly before. And, I guess 64-bit really didn't make that much of a splash. And when I say recent, it came out in April of this year. So, you know, that's very, very recent.
Now, and, you know, I think this has only become an issue because Windows has for its recent versions of Windows, made 64-bit versions only, like Windows 8. I think they're only 64-bit versions, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's become an issue because of that kind of thing. But like I said, with Linux and even with the Mac, it's a non-issue whether it's 32-bit, 64-bit. Mm. A Mac has been running 64-bit for quite a long time, and who knew?
All right.
You know, who cares?
Okay.
Agreed.
Okay.
So before we go on to the next email, as you're fond of saying, you know, Craig, that we defer to emails and questions from the chat room. We did have a question in the chat room earlier from Jack Death.
Okay.
And he said, I have a school that wants to put Linux on some workstations. However, they have Windows 2008 server. Is there a way to get Linux to authenticate to Active Directory? Will security apply? Will they get drive mappings, etc.?
Okay.
And the answer is yes, but not without some additional software. So you will need some software that is available for Linux that will allow it to authenticate, and by authenticate what we mean is to log into using username and password into an Active Directory server. Now, Active Directory is a Windows thing, and it provides security typically on corporate networks by ensuring that if you don't have a username and password registered on the server, there's no way you can log in. So you can install some software. It used to be called Likewise is what it was called, and you would install it on your Linux computer, and you would install it on the Windows server and connect it up with Active Directory, and then it would work with Active Directory just as though your computer were running Active Directory in Windows, and it works just fine. The current name for it is Beyond Trust. Yeah, they changed their name for some reason. I think somebody bought them out or something like that. But it's still the same software, and it still works just fine. For security, you will have the security that Active Directory gives you. And for drive mappings and so on, you may want to use Samba Sharing. Samba is a Windows and Mac compatible file sharing protocol that you can install on Mac, Windows, and Linux, and make them all talk to one another and share files.
All right, so there you go. And that was asked by, who asked that? Jack Death. Okay.
Jack Death.
All right. Hopefully that answers your question. We're going to continue on with more emails. It's our All Linux Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. If you have a question, we'll be glad to answer for you. We'll continue on with Aaron next. Stay with us. Okay, so we're going to continue on with Larry Bushy. We're doing emails, and this next one is from Aaron, who lists the three the three mistakes he made buying a Linux laptop. You can make you can make three?
And
wow.
And maybe you can avoid these yourself by listening to what Aaron has to say.
Okay.
So he says, "Hi, going Linux guy, Linux guys. I am addicted to distro hopping."
Oh.
Distro hopping, for our new listeners, is when you switch from Linux distribution to distribution to distribution, either because you want to try them all out, which would take a long, long time, mm-hmm. or because you can't make up your mind which one you like the best.
Okay.
So that's distro hopping.
As opposed to disco hopping,
which is a whole different thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Distro hopping has less music. anyway, he says, "And I enjoy keeping older computers running, probably by that distro hopping. The laptops keep running are a Dell 600, 1.6 gigahertz, and a Dell 610, 1.8 gigahertz. Large video and flash animations, you know, all those advertisements, slow them down. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they run great. Now, many of the distributions that I try don't work because they require the," and he writes this, "never execute bit processors," which I'm not sure what he means by that, but he also says PAE, which is the technology that they use to address more than 4 gigabytes of RAM on a 32 gigabyte operating system. That's that PAE. Mm-hmm. So he says many of the distributions don't work for him because they require that, and I'm assuming that his hardware doesn't mm-hmm. accept it. "I bought a Samsung NP385C-A0B laptop."
I love that name.
Yes, isn't that catchy?
It's so catchy.
"I'm not sure that that's not an ultrabook. That may be one of the nice, light, thin, slim, super fast Samsungs."
Or maybe not.
Yeah, maybe so. Either way, he bought one. And he said, "Mistake number one, it has an Intel B950 processor." Nope, it's not an ultrabook. "For about $40 more, I could have had an i3 processor. They are about a third faster at the same processor speed. But more than that, the B950 does not support virtual machines." So there's no virtualization built into the processor. "Mistake number two, because of Windows 8, it has secure boot enabled in the UEFI firmware by default. What a pain to get Linux on there and the dual boot. I have to go into the BIOS and turn off UEFI to boot into Linux. To boot Windows 8, I have to go back into BIOS, turn on UEFI." Yeah, like that's going to happen very often. "Mistake number three, Windows 8. Oops, sorry, never mind. That's Microsoft's mistake, not mine." I heard Larry say he was thinking about a new laptop and thought I would share my experience as a warning, Aaron. Well, thanks, Aaron. I decided to upgrade my existing laptop rather than buy a new one, so I don't have to worry about that. But thanks anyway, and I'm sure some of our other listeners will benefit from that too.
Okay, good. All right, thanks.
Okay. Our next email is from Rich, and Rich finds a work computer in need of what he calls defrigging.
Not defragging?
Not defragging, defrigging.
Okay.
Okay, I think he's removing the frigging Windows operating system is what he's talking about here.
I see.
Anyway, Rich says, "Hi, guys. Some episodes ago, you posted several episodes concerning complaints about your podcast bashing Windows. Frankly, I didn't care and fast-forwarded through them. I was at work talking to a friend who is also running a Linux box at home, and I tried to show him a Flash video. I thought he'd be interested in. Needless to say, Work uses Windows machines, spelled Windows, W-I-N-D-O-Z-E, because Microsoft, spelled with a dollar sign instead of the S, certified script kiddies are cheaper to hire than real IT professionals. So we open the video file. No problem, just click and, oh, no flash allowed. Must be a security risk or something. Remember, this is a work lab, work computer here. So we need to transcode to WMV format, I guess. No problem. We'll just go into a different workspace and, oh, yeah, only one workspace on Windows. Have to minimize everything. No problem. We'll just minimize everything and, oh, yeah, no transcoding software bundled with Windows. No problem. We'll just go to the Software Center and, oh, that's right, no Software Center. No problem. We'll just go to the Internet and download. Oh, yeah, Windows is so virus-prone that IT locked down all downloads. I stared for a second, then looked at my friend and said, I don't think there's any way we can play this video on this machine. He said, Windows is just a hateful operating system. And that is why I still defrig any computer that comes into my house, Rich.
So, what do you really think about Windows, Rich?
Yes, exactly. And all of those things that he was trying to do, you could do quite easily on Linux because all of the software he was trying to use, all of that transcoding stuff, all of the downloading the software from the Software Center, all of it comes with Linux because Linux is pre-installed with everything you would ever need to use to run a normal home computer and get whatever software you need to run in it.
Okay, 866-606-8255. That's the number we'll get you on and get you through. 866-606-TALK.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We're going over emails that that Larry receives throughout the month. And I got to say, your listeners are hilarious when it comes to Microsoft and their hate for them. I know they have problems, but you know, just they have legitimate problems with it, and they do so in a funny way. So, you know, kudos to your listeners.
I love our listeners. I really do. They've got a sense of humor. If even you know, if they spend a lot of time poking fun at Windows, that's okay because it's a Linux podcast.
Exactly.
Right
now, go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say that we could go on with Simon's email, but if you have something to say.
No, Simon wants something more advanced, so let's hear what he has to say.
He does, or at least he says he does. He says, hi, going Linux guys. He said the same thing as the previous guy did. Anyway, I've been listening since the early shows when Larry was just a co-host and have finally caught up to the most recent episode. My question is, do you know of any other podcasts that are more advanced? I don't need one specific to Linux, and actually prefer one that also talks about BSD and or Unix, but is tailored towards the advanced users. I'll always listen to Going Linux because I enjoy Tom's and your personality and humor. Thanks, and sorry if my English isn't perfect. Simon. I would never have known, Simon, that your language was not English. There was no accent in the way you said that or anything.
Nope, not at all.
So to answer the question, yes, there are plenty of more advanced podcasts out there for all different kinds of topics. And in the show notes, let me just scroll down here a little bit. I have a link to some more Linux podcasts and other podcasts listed on the goinglinux.com articles and resources page. We'll have a link there. From there, you can click through, find other introductory episodes, introductory type podcasts, other podcasts that are much, much more advanced. And lots to choose from there. And if I had to recommend one that does a lot of alternative operating systems, and I mean alternatives to Linux, Mac, and Windows, like BSD, you might check out some of the ones that are put out by the guys that do the Linux Action Show. Just Google Linux Action Show. You'll find them. They have a network of all kinds of podcasts there. And one of them is co-hosted by a guy who runs the BSD operating system on servers and runs what appears to be a hosting company using those servers. So lots to choose from there.
All right, good. All right. So, again, reading that paragraph over, your English is perfect, Simon.
It is perfect.
Don't ever say that again.
Couldn't do better.
Don't ever say that again, because people just wonder about you.
Robert
sent us a link to a video from Nixie Pixel on how to install Netflix on Linux.
Yeah, now Nixie Pixel is kind of a character. She had her own podcast and independent podcast and website for a while. And then she became part of the Revision 3 network and has several different shows on there, video podcasts primarily. And she boils down installing Netflix on Linux to three commands on Ubuntu and Ubuntu derivative Linux. What are they called? Distributions. There we go. But there's a video. We'll have a link to the video. She's quite entertaining, but it's really just three commands where you type in sudo to become a root access. You add a repository. And a repository is a, think of it as a library of software that you can use with your Linux computer. Then you update that repository. That essentially just refreshes it so that Linux gets to see what's new in there. And then you type in sudo, again, to become a root or privileged access user of your computer. apt-get, which is a command line way of installing software, the word install, and then Netflix-desktop. It'll run through the installation script. It will install a whole bunch of stuff, including Netflix, which will actually run under Wine, which is a Windows application layer that allows you to run Windows applications within Linux. And that's what this is doing. It's running the Windows version of Netflix under Wine, under Linux, and it works just fine. And in the video, Nixie describes how to do this on Fedora as well. It's much more geeky on the Fedora distribution of Linux than it is on Ubuntu and Ubuntu derivatives, because the Ubuntu folks developed a script to do it, whereas Fedora, you got to download some stuff and uncompress a file and then run the script from inside the compressed file. A little more geeky, but still pretty straightforward. And she gives you instructions. So lots of great ways to run Netflix and view Netflix videos on your Linux computer.
So in other words, they don't do it natively. You do have to do this.
Right. And, you know, there's really no reason not to do it that way. If the Netflix folks aren't going to develop a native application for Linux, running it under Wine is just fine. You don't lose anything. You don't take a performance hit. It runs just fine.
Okay.
And
right.
Plenty of gamers run their games, their Windows games on Linux, on the Linux operating system using Wine to run them. And it runs just fine.
All right. Fine. I don't know. It keeps conjuring up some really funny images when I think of a glass of wine every time you say, oh, they're playing game
sure.
on wine.
You know? Well, and they, you know, this is Linux, of course. So all of the icons that they use you know, talk about it, have a glass of wine.
Exactly.
And, it's Linux. You gotta take the joke with it, right?
You got it. All right. Let's head all the way down to Perth, Australia.
And, let's do that.
And talk to Andrew. He gives a link as well, right?
Yep. He says, hi, guys. Only recently discovered your show and enjoy listening to it. I started using Linux a year ago. Ubuntu 11.04 is the distribution, and love using it and encourage others to give it a go. I keep an Ubuntu Live CD in my bag. We'll define and discuss that in a minute and hand it out to whoever is keen. I currently triple boot Ubuntu 12.10, Fedora 16, and Windows 7. Again, spelled with a Z instead of an S. No, that's not a spelling mistake, he says. Okay. I listened to your episode 190 yesterday, and during your Q&A time, you mentioned a question about increasing virtual machine image sizes at timestamp 2632, increasing the virtual machine image size. We put timestamps in the show notes. The consensus from you guys was that it couldn't be done. However, only last week I read an article on just that. Read the article for yourselves. He provides a link. It's on the How to Geek site. We'll include that in the show notes. On how to enlarge a virtual machine disk in VirtualBox or VMware, two of the most popular virtual machines. He continues, hope this gets to the listener in question and helps him out. Keep up the good and informative work. I look forward to listening to your future shows. Andrew in Perth, Australia.
All right. There you go.
And this live CD he was talking about, when you go to install a Linux distribution, you don't go to the store and buy it on a CD. No. From your Windows machine or your Linux machine or your Macintosh machine, you can go to the site for the Linux distribution, and Ubuntu is one of those. It's the one he mentioned, and it's spelled U-B-U-N-T-U. Yes, it's got three U's in its name. Ubuntu is a Linux distribution that's one of the most popular, arguably the most popular Linux distribution out there. You go to their website, you click download, and it downloads a file. That file then ends in the .iso, file extension. And what that means is it's an image file. It's a compressed and packaged up CD in a file. And on most modern operating systems, including Windows 8, Windows 7, a Macintosh, and Linux, of course, you just right-click on it and burn it to a CD. You don't just copy the file over. Once you've burned it to a CD or a DVD, depending on how big it is, you would then put that CD in the drive. You would turn off your computer and reboot it, and you may have to hit function F7 or function F12 or something like that to cause it to actually boot from the CD. And that allows you to live try it out. It's running the entire operating system from on the CD, and it works like a champ. It works a little bit slower because it's running from the CD, and a CD doesn't run as quickly as a hard drive. But you can try out the software. You can install software on the software, and you can use it right there in your computer.
Very, very nice. Trying it with no risks. No burning any bridges. Hey, I want to skip over Daniels, and I want to go to Chris next, who uses a Zune with a ZenBook and Ubuntu. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux tonight, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Larry Bushy is here with us, and we are just we're winding up the hour with the emails that he receives over the month. And this next one is Chris, who uses a Zune. I don't know if the Zune people are still using those.
They are not supported anymore, but I suppose that anything sold must still be working.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you've got one laying around, you may as well use it, I guess.
Yeah.
So he's using his Zune with a ZenBook and Ubuntu. He says, hey, fellas, this is coming to you from the front line of newbie interaction with Linux. I'm young enough to have had technology classes as part of my middle school curriculum when the educational institution was still trembling from the shock of email's arrival on the scene, but old enough to feel shame at my lingering ineptitude when it comes to maneuvering around this nutty machine that has been a central feature of my life for a long time. Well, this particular machine is new, but I think you get what I mean. My recent entrance to Linux has been by way of Ubuntu 12.04 running on an Asus ZenBook laptop, certainly not an old computer.
No.
My first newbie mistake was completely discarding Windows as soon as Ubuntu seemed stable without taking the time to permit the inevitable hiccups to reveal themselves. One of these was a realization that I had no way to access the music managed by my Zune. It was free, okay?
Yeah.
So your episode on virtual machines had me really excited. Based on the research that I had done online, even Wine has been so far unable to permit regular use of the Zune software to Linux users. Well, the installation of VirtualBox, of course, went off without a hitch. The repository structure and the Ubuntu graphical user interface makes this sort of thing remarkably painless for a noob. However, once I had Windows 7 up and running on my new virtual machine, so awesome, seriously. Thanks again. I ran into a whole new slew of trouble trying to get files shared between the two, software installed, and devices recognized. Downloading drivers, searching for updates, and adjusting user settings really tested my patience. Just an aside, very few people actually install Windows. The only time they get it is when it's pre-installed on a computer and they don't have to go through that pain.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chris continues, after a couple of days of further research online, two peripheral concepts seemed to be most directly responsible for the trouble. And I think that an oversight of their patience to the larger topic of virtual machines would have been appreciated by anyone else in my situation. These are the various processes entailed by permitting, installing, and enabling guest editions and the current recommended expansion packs for the version of VirtualBox that a user may have installed. For a casual user, the successful integration of two operating systems on a single piece of hardware will certainly be at least as valuable as the initial installation. Thanks for the great coverage and insight. I'm slowly working my way through your library of previous episodes while trying to follow your current updates as well. Now, while cycling to work through the rice fields of rural Japan on a Zune that is managed by a virtual machine recommended by y'all. Keep it up, Chris. I take it from that y'all that he is not originally from Japan.
I would not think so, exactly.
No. So it looks like Chris is having fun learning about Linux, using virtual machines, and a Zune of all things to listen to our podcast. Okay.
All right. And I think we have enough time to do Goran from Sweden.
Sure. He actually pronounces his name Joran.
Uh-huh.
He sent us an audio file that helped us pronounce it correctly. So he writes, hello, Tom, Larry, and in particular, Bill. Tom and Bill are my co-hosts.
Right.
In your Virtual Machine Advanced episode, there was a bit of discussion about CPUs. Mm-hmm. Some comments mentioned hyperthreading and counted cores as if a hyperthreaded core is more or less equivalent to a regular one. That isn't really the case. The performance from hyperthreading is much less than from multiple cores.
Yeah.
Thanks for an interesting podcast.
And that's a good point, and it is, you know, obviously. I mean, hyperthreading is sort of like a trick to getting it to work, you know, whereas multiple cores, you actually have multiple cores doing different processes. We're just about out of time, Larry. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the next Going Linux podcast.
Okay, our next Going Linux podcast is going to be a listener feedback episode, if I remember correctly, where we do more about answering listener questions and reading emails and helping people to learn about Linux and adopt Linux and move to Linux from other operating systems like, Windows and Mac.
There you go. Hey, Larry, we're just out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us here, and we will catch you in the new year on the 15th of January.
Sounds good.
Happy New Year to you. Happy holidays. And thank you so much for being with us here tonight, Larry. Great show.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Have a good night. Good night.
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 Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.